Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today we open with some top stories out of Sacramento. The State Senate has passed the Healthy California Act, which would provide single-payer universal health care for all Californians. Find out how this landmark bill would affect you if it becomes law, some huge obstacles that it still faces, and what options are being considered to pay for it on today's show. We'll also have news about a bill advancing in the legislature to require lead testing of water in public schools. From Caltrans, we'll have an alert about an upcoming local highway closure that will last for 10 days. Learn about some controversies being faced by local boards, specifically just who should decide what does or does not get on their agendas. On Green Scene, we'll have an update on Mexican sewage spills along the border and what several local members of Congress are doing to try and get the federal government to take action. In El Cajon, we'll tell you about a new animal shelter that's finally breaking ground. On our Capitol Report, hear about a bill to reduce regulations on electronic cigarettes introduced by an East County congressman who's also taken large contributions from the tobacco industry. Our newsmaker interview today is with Dr. James Veltmeyer. He's an immigrant who is now the chief of family medicine at Sharp Grossmont Hospital and who has been named the top doctor in San Diego three times by the San Diego Medical Society. Now he's battling to save the life of his wife, who has been stricken by breast cancer and yet was denied critical diagnostic tests by her insurance company that delayed her diagnosis and put her life at risk. Dr. Veltmeyer also has some ideas for reforming our health care system that are different than what's in Obamacare or the Republican health care plan, ideas that he hopes to see considered to prevent anyone else from suffering the emotional trauma that he and his young family are going through. And finally, we'll end our show today by sharing some news about an epic hiking feat achieved by several local hikers in Mission Trails Regional Park. So stay tuned for these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on health care from our state capitol. Both houses of California's legislature have passed the landmark Healthy California Act, a bill that would create a single-payer, universal health care system run by the state of California to replace insurance companies. If enacted, the measure, co-authored by San Diego Democratic Assemblywoman Toni Atkins and Senator Ricardo Lara from Bell Gardens, would cover all Californians. You would pay no premiums, co-pays, or deductibles, and the plan would cover all of your medical, dental, and vision care, as well as mental health, chiropractic services, and more. But Senate Bill 352 must now go back to the Assembly for reconciliation because the bill was advanced without details on how to pay for it in order to meet legislative deadlines. It contains a clause that says the bill can't become law without the Secretary of Health and Human Services determining that a new Healthy California Trust Fund has enough revenues to fund the bill's costs. The costs are formidable. A Senate committee analysis found that providing health care for all Californians could cost more than the entire state budget in 2016, or over $400 billion. Republican legislator Tom Berryhill has stated, "We don't have the money to pay for it." But another report by the University of Massachusetts Amherst, commissioned by the California Nurses Association, found that the bill would reduce overall health care spending in California by 18%. That second study also had a slightly lower estimate on total costs of about $331 billion, though still hefty. A substantial portion of the money needed could come from money already being spent on health care by the state and federal governments, though a large gap remains to be filled, most likely by raising taxes. The estimates make assumptions that California would get a waiver from the federal government although that's a huge if under the Trump administration. Now, of the $331 billion needed to run the Healthy California system, if the nurse's estimate is correct, $225 billion would come from existing federal and state sources. That includes funds already being expended on Medicare and Medi-Cal. The state's savings would kick in by reducing administrative costs on healthcare billing and executive salaries, as well as negotiating with pharmaceutical companies to lower prescription drug costs. The state could also potentially revise reimbursements to medical providers, but that could pose problems since many providers are already balking at reduced rates under Medicare. Even if the $225 billion is available from federal and state funds, it still leaves a gap of at least $106.9 billion to fill. The nurses group proposes that $92.6 billion of that could come from businesses, many of whom are currently paying to buy health insurance for workers but would no longer have to pay that expense if the bill passed, so they could afford to pay their share for universal health care coverage, or so the argument goes. The remaining $14.3 billion could come from increasing sales taxes by 2.3%, though certain necessity items such as groceries, utility payments, and rent would be exempted. There would also be help for low-income Californians. So if the plan becomes law, would you ultimately be paying more or less than now? That depends on a variety of factors, such as how much money you spend on sales taxes right now and what your current health care premiums are. Many people are paying hundreds of dollars each month for health care premiums alone. Add in savings if you didn't have to pay copays or deductibles on medical services, hospitalizations, ambulances, or prescription medications, and the increased sales tax might seem modest in comparison. However, if your current premium is paid for mostly by your employer, and if you have substantial taxable purchases such as buying vehicles or costly vacations, you could wind up paying more. The bill would cover all California residents, including citizens and undocumented residents, and everyone with pre-existing conditions. It would allow insurance to remain in place for persons still establishing residency to qualify for the state-run plan. Patients and doctors would no longer have to get pre-approval from insurance companies or deal with insurance companies at all. The system would be a single-payer system similar to Canada and Britain's, where the government replaces private insurance companies, paying doctors and hospitals directly for their health care services. This is somewhat similar to the Medicare for All model proposed by Senator Bernie Sanders during his presidential campaign. The bill has drawn opposition from insurance companies and from the California Chamber of Commerce, which has labeled it a job killer. If approved, the measure would cause displacement of jobs in the insurance industry, although the bill provides some retraining for workers in insurance fields. It's also drawn opposition from taxpayer groups and conservatives. The Healthy California Act has drawn support, in concept, pending funding details, from a broad range of consumer and health organizations, labor unions, minority groups, and advocates for veterans, seniors, and the disabled. If both houses do agree on a funding solution, the bill would go to Governor Jerry Brown. But the future of the bill may hinge on what happens in Washington, D.C. The Republican-controlled House of Representatives has passed a plan that repeals the Affordable Health Care Act, or Obamacare, and replaces it with a Republican plan. According to the Congressional Budget Office, it would throw 23 million Americans off of health care coverage completely by eliminating subsidies for the poor. It would also cause many Americans with pre-existing conditions and seniors to pay much higher rates in order to keep coverage, although some young people could pay less. Fear that the bill now in Congress may soon become law has pushed California Democrats to move toward universal health care in an effort to protect many Californians from losing coverage or facing even more unaffordable rates. The federal bill passed by the House is now before the U.S. Senate, which has indicated it will be making significant changes if it passes the measure at all, in which case it would go to President Donald Trump to sign. Just what the Senate may pass and what it may include is a huge unknown at this point. Governor Jerry Brown has voiced major skepticism over whether it's possible to fund a universal health care system in California to improve health for residents without jeopardizing the state's financial well-being. Brown has said that the first priority should be to stop the Republican health care bill in Congress from becoming law. But he left the door open to consider a universal health care plan for California if the funding issue can be resolved. Assemblyman Atkins and Senator Lara, the measure's co-authors, adamantly defend the need for their measure. Senator Atkins says she has personally experienced being poor and worrying about not having access to health care when she was young, and she's heard from many constituents who fear losing health care if the Affordable Health Care Act is repealed. Atkins says, "More and more Californians believe health care is a basic human right." But she acknowledges, "Let's be clear. There is a lot of hard work to be done on this bill. There will be numerous hearings, plenty of input from interested parties, and lots of time for the public to weigh in." Senator Lara notes that millions of Californians still do not have access to health insurance, and millions more can't afford the high deductibles and copays and often forgo care. He concludes, "This is the right fight and the right thing to do for California's families, children, and seniors."
This is Gene Carpenter with an education report. San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher won approval from the State Assembly last week for her legislation that will require school districts to test for lead contamination in their water supplies and notify parents if any lead is discovered. Assembly Bill 746 was approved on a unanimous 68-0 vote. Gonzalez-Fletcher states, "It's unacceptable that children and teachers could be poisoned by drinking from the water fountains at school right here in California. Protecting the health of our kids is our first priority, and right now, we don't know if they are truly being protected from lead in their drinking water," she adds. Recently, lead contamination was discovered at several San Diego schools. In January, La Mirada Elementary School in San Ysidro had water tests positive for lead contamination. Soon after, contaminated water was found at Emerson Bandini Elementary. Contaminated drinking water at those schools was only discovered incidentally. Contractors working at La Mirada noticed discoloration in water and suggested school administrators have it tested. Contamination at Emerson Bandini was only brought to light after a service dog refused to drink water at the school. Those findings triggered a wave of testing in San Diego schools. Testing is still ongoing, but has already discovered contaminated water at additional campus Byerney Elementary School. Some East County campuses have announced plans to voluntarily test lead in water, and the Grossmont Union District announced that no lead was found. But for parents in many other districts, there is no certainty as to whether or not children are being exposed to lead in drinking water, as occurred in Flint, Michigan. In 2016, Reuters News released a national survey showing that California was home to 8 of the zip codes with highest lead contamination rates in the nation. There are no safe levels of lead, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. Use of lead pipes in construction was banned in the 1980s, but lead exposure remains a major public health concern. Lead exposure in children is particularly dangerous, causing brain damage, learning and behavioral difficulties, and impaired mental faculties. Assemblywoman Gonzalez-Fletcher's bill would require all public schools from preschool through high school to test water for lead contamination on a regular basis. If contamination is discovered in drinking water, the bill requires schools to take the contaminated water out of service immediately. The school would also be required to notify parents and staff of their potential exposure to lead.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from Caltrans. State Route 78 will be closed for 10 days between Weekend Villa Road to Indian Oak Road, between Escondido and Ramona, starting on Friday, June 9th at 6 a.m. through Monday, June 19th. This closure is necessary so that crews can build a retaining wall to stabilize the slope on the north side of the highway where rock slides recently occurred. Closure is subject to changes based on weather conditions. Caltrans had originally planned the closure in mid-May, but postponed it to avoid impacting traffic for the Ramona Rodeo. Detours will extend from Cloverdale Road, San Pasquale Road area to Main Street and State Route 67 in Ramona, though access for locals will still be available. Expect traffic delays if you are traveling in these areas.
Who should decide what items wind up on the agenda for a public board? Should a chair or a board majority have unlimited power, or should each member have the right to add agenda items, and if so, how many? These are questions that members of multiple local boards have been wrestling with recently. In El Cajon, newly elected Councilmember Ben Colasio advised the council that he has more than 60 items he'd like to add to the agenda over the next year. but the entire council, with all members combined, has added only a handful of items to the agenda in the past year, though some other items were added at the request of staff or members of the public. Too many agenda items can take valuable staff time to research, drawing time away from other items that may be more timely or important, some members have argued. El Cajon's council considered a measure to require approval by two council members to put an item on the agenda, a concept that La Mesa City Council considered and rejected. Opponents point out that both cities have four Republicans and one Democrat, raising the potential for one party to control the agenda. El Cajon also opted against that option, but last week approved a plan to hold two public hearings a year in which members of the public and council members can propose and discuss possible agenda items. Council would then determine which items to prioritize. Councilman Ben Colasso, the only Democrat and minority as an Iraqi Chaldean serving on the council, objected to the plan and called it a muzzle ordinance. However, it passed 4-1. Meanwhile, on the Alpine Community Planning Group, conservative member Lou Russo asked for equal time to present an opposing view after a fire chief presented an argument in favor of annexation by the Alpine Fire Department of an area previously covered by the Rural Fire Protection District. The item was informational only and no vote was taken. The chair denied Russo's request for equal time. County Council later affirmed that in the case of community planning groups, a chair does have power to set agendas even over the objections of one or more fellow members. These cases raise important questions about the democratic process and what protections, if any, should be provided to protect elected officials' ability to voice their views, even if those opinions are unpopular with a board's majority. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Green Scene Report. Concerns are mounting over repeated spills of raw sewage from Mexico into the Tijuana River Valley on the U.S. side of the border. 13 separate discharges in January and February of 2016 spilled 27.6 million gallons. In 2017, a spill that began February 6 pumped an estimated 143 million gallons or more into the Tijuana River over 17 days, causing widespread contamination on the U.S. side of the border. That massive spill resulted in foul odors, E. coli contamination in the Tijuana River Valley, and other damage. An investigation by the International Boundary and Water Commission found the spill occurred during repair work on the Mexican side of the border. Then on May 28th, yet another spill dumped 335,000 gallons more, Fox 5 reported, just in time for the Memorial Day weekend. Imperial Beach Mayor Sergey Dedina tweeted, "It never ends, is why we need a backup system in the U.S." On March 1st, Congressman Juan Vargas and Congressman Scott Peters sent a letter to Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt and to Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, urging the EPA and State Department to take action. In April, Vargas toured the spill site. Vargas has also criticized the Trump administration. Instead of cutting funding for major EPA programs that positively impact millions of Americans, President Trump should be prioritizing funding for programs that will keep our beaches open and free from pollution, Vargas said. He added that he will continue working to protect funds for programs that benefit communities and help prevent environmental disasters. Congressman Duncan Hunter also sent a letter on May 9th to Tillerson and Pruitt, asking them to take action. Hunter cited concerns not only for environmental and public health, but also negative impacts felt by U.S. Border Patrol agents and Navy SEAL teams performing responsibilities in the area daily. He says he has received reports of Border Patrol agents falling ill, being forced to leave their shifts, and potentially putting their families at risk of diseases. He added, "I am aware of critical military operations and exercises in the area being suspended because of the harmful conditions and risks the current spill poses. In other words, this sewage spill is unquestionably adversely affecting our ability to respond to national security priority." Hunter called U.S. actions woefully insufficient and Mexico's response passive at best. Mexican authorities have indicated they will work to resolve spills and provide provide prompter notifications to U.S. officials, the San Diego Tribune reported back in March, but the latest spill cast doubt on Mexico's ability or willingness to take appropriate actions to prevent this clear threat to public health and the environment.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Jordan Damon with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. Congressman Duncan Hunter has introduced the Cigarette Smoking Reduction and Electronic Vapor Alternatives Act, which would ease regulations on vaping and electronic cigarettes. Hunter states in a press release, "This bill is the way forward for smokers who want to quit smoking and vapers who enjoy vaping." He adds that the bill would also benefit businesses trying to supply vaping products, but Duncan Hunter does not address the potential dangers of e-cigarettes. The tobacco industry gave over $16,000 to Duncan Hunter during his most recent campaign. The San Diego Union-Tribune recently quoted Duncan Hunter's aide, Joe Casper, who noted that Hunter holds events at cigar lounges and has raised money there. The large tobacco industry donations raise the question, whose interest is Hunter representing? Consumers or tobacco companies? The bill that Hunter is proposing will reverse the effects of the deeming rule adopted during the Obama administration. That rule allows the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA for short, to review ingredients of e-cigarettes and vaping devices before they can be sold. Hunter claims this is overly burdensome on businesses. Under Hunter's measure, e-cigarette makers and vaping product manufacturers could release unregulated products that may harm the user. Hunter has argued that since not all e-cigarettes contain tobacco, they should not be regulated like cigarettes. However, e-cigarettes do contain nicotine, one of the most addictive substances in the world. It also contains other harmful chemicals such as glycol and glycerin, two food solvents that when vaporized become carcinogens. The Surgeon General, in a December 2016 report, also raised concerns about the accessibility of e-cigarettes by children, as well as manufacturers making flavors such as bubble gum that are attractive to youngsters. The use of these e-cigarettes more than doubled from 2013 to 2014 among young adults of the age of 18 to 24 years old. Long-term impacts on teens exposed to chemicals and nicotine are a particular concern to public health professionals. Hunter argues that e-cigarettes help smokers quit and says they helped him get off of cigarettes, though he continues vaping e-cigarettes. The Wall Street Journal has reported that multiple professors of psychiatry and behavioral science have argued about whether e-cigarettes are effective replacements for smoking or not. However, nearly every professor has agreed that it's far too early to determine what adverse effects the chemicals in e-cigarettes have on the body long term. Vaping advocates point to a 2015 study by Public Health England, which concluded that e-cigarettes are 95% safer than conventional cigarettes. However, a story from Cancer Search UK suggests that many users of e-cigarettes still smoke conventional cigarettes and that e-cigarettes don't take away the effects that chemicals in both types of products could have on the body. Hunter, a longtime advocate of increasing rights for smokers, once vaped an e-cigarette on the House floor in protest over a bill that banned vaping on airplanes.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a report from El Cajon. Dogs, cats, and other pets awaiting adoption in El Cajon will soon have some spacious new digs. The long-awaited El Cajon Animal Shelter is finally under construction after years of planning and design. A groundbreaking ceremony was held last week, with the new shelter expected to open by fall 2018. The new facility on North Marshall Avenue will replace a 50-year-old structure nearby and is twice the size of the older building with room to grow. The new shelter will include housing for animals awaiting adoption, veterinary services for sick and injured shelter pets, grooming, play and exercise areas, pet adoption services, and administrative offices. The building's modern style of architecture will include playful pet images on the exterior. The shelter's estimated $9.3 million cost is funded by Proposition O special revenues, a half-cent sales tax increase that voters approved back in 2004, The special tax ended in 2015. Now taxpayers are finally seeing the results of those revenues to improve life for pets in the city's animal shelter.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. My very special guest today is Dr. James Veltmeyer. He is the chief of the Department of Family Medicine at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, and he's been named the top medical doctor in San Diego, not just once, but three times in 2012, 2014, and 2016, and that's according to his own colleagues in the San Diego Medical Society. That's quite an honor. We are here today to talk about two things: his own personal struggle with a very difficult situation that he's been dealing with within the healthcare system, and then secondly, to discuss his ideas for reforming our healthcare system that's actually very different than what we've heard out of either political party. So, Dr. Veltmeyer, thank you very much for joining us and taking the time to come on our show today.
Thank you very much for having me here and allow me to share my story.
Dr. Veltmeyer, can you start by sharing with our listeners a little bit about your background?
I'm a child of four children. I was born actually in South America, third world country, Guayaquil. And I really need to share the story that when I was a year old, my father abandoned our family, so we became very poor. When I was 9 years old, I was actually living on the streets with my two brothers, my sister, and my mom, so we were homeless.
Wow. So you know what it's like to be poor and at the other end of the spectrum.
I was extremely fortunate that I had an aunt that lived here in El Cajon that worked very hard for 2 years to get me to America. Mm-hmm. After six rejections in 2 years, I was able finally to come here for a better tomorrow. My mom came here 8 years after, so her legal process was 10 years. Mm-hmm. My aunt who raised me, who actually just recently passed away on May 1st this year, she did not know how to read or write. And I can proudly say that I am the chief. I've been elected chief of the medicine department at Sharp Grossmont Hospital for the last 5 years.
Very good. So you really are a true American success story, an immigrant who was able to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, so to speak, and
that's it, my own sweats, my own determination.
Congratulations.
And I've been blessed. And I've been blessed that, you know, I came to America, the land of opportunity, right, the land of dreams. So I worked very hard and accomplish, you know, what I've accomplished. It's because this is the only country on the planet that gives you that opportunity.
Yes.
If you work hard with education. In 2015, July 2015, my wife got diagnosed with breast cancer.
Terrible.
And just so you know, we do have the highest premium, the highest PPO that money can buy.
Yeah, so you have what would be considered sort of a gold-plated insurance plan. You obviously can afford that as a physician. And yet, I think it's really a statement about our situation with healthcare in America that even a top physician with the best healthcare that money can buy.
And I have resources that most Americans do not have.
That when your wife was diagnosed with this terrible illness, breast cancer, you found that certain critical things were not covered. So tell us about that.
Yes, basic health insurance coverage was not rendered or given to my wife.
So we're talking about diagnostic testing.
Yes. So I diagnosed my wife with a breast mass. I brought her here at Sharp Grossmont Hospital. Mm-hmm. I took it straight to my colleague, an oncologist, and we walked directly to the radiology, and we requested it breast mass ultrasound-guided biopsy, because that's what we needed.
Right.
we were stopped by the insurance company and they wanted us to get a chest x-ray, which we refused. So then they wanted us, my wife, to have a mammogram. And we explained to the insurance company and said, look, my wife just had a mammogram 7 months ago and it was normal.
Yeah.
And they told us pretty much, if you want the biopsy, you need to get the mammogram. So we agreed to get the mammogram. We waited for 4 hours for pre-authorization for an imaging study that they forced us to take.
What did it show?
Nothing.
Gee.
Normal, just like it was seven months ago. So we waited, and I think an additional 2-3 hours to get the lung biopsy that we had requested from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Same day, once we got the biopsy, we walked to the pathology department and we got a preliminary report that it was cancer, malignant cells. Now, think about this. What I did in one day is sort of like parting the Red Sea.
Yeah.
It would take the average American months to get this done.
And even after all of that, even with, frankly, the privilege and the access that you as a doctor had, this still was not enough. Then what happened?
So the oncologist ordered a PET scan to stage her cancer.
And explain, for those who may not know, what is a PET scan and why is that a superior test?
Okay, so let me just give you what the MRI, CT scan, chest x-ray, and so forth, what that really is. It's a two-dimensional gray and white imaging study. Mm-hmm. So in order for that to detect cancer, you have to have an anatomically a tumor large enough where you be able to kind of say, okay, does that look like a part of the liver or adrenal gland and so forth. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is that you can have small tumors that may be behind a organ, tissue, bone, and you're going to miss it.
So a PET scan will show that?
PET scan, if you've never seen what the heart looks like or the lungs or the liver on any imaging study, but I would just say, Miriam, look at the PET scan. Anything that highlights red, aside from the heart, it's cancer.
Okay. So you asked for the PET scan, her oncologist.
The oncologist, the expert, asked for the PET scan, and it was denied. And my wife was forced to have an MRI of the brain, bone scan, and a CT scan of the chest, CT scan of the abdomen, CT scan of the pelvis.
So all this extra radiation and cost for all these other tests, and
it didn't serve her well, right? She from the very beginning, she was not properly staged. So she underwent her chemo cycle, mm-hmm. Every 3 weeks, 6 times. And guess what the oncologist, the expert, recommended? A PET scan for surveillance.
Yeah.
Pharmaceutical company, when they research and develop medication, right, cancer treatment, to cure cancer, exclusively they use PET scan, 100%. Not so MRI, not CT scan, x-ray, bone, nothing.
So they know this is the most effective. It's
exactly.
The gold standard.
Exactly. But so she was denied again.
Wow.
Just to give you a quick summary now.
So how much time had gone by?
She's gone through 3 chemo cycles, 1 radiation cycle. She underwent bilateral radical mastectomies. And her PET scan for surveillance after all that was denied.
Gee.
So she's had 3 MRIs. She's had about 8 CT scans. I can't tell you how many x-rays she's done. And we had 2 bone scans. Then we had the mammogram.
Awful.
And at this point, all she needed, 2 PET scan.
So
back, just to give you a quick update, back in last December, 2016, mm-hmm. She underwent her reconstruction surgery. In January, she was told she was in remission. The problem is that my wife never felt that she was healed or she was in remission because she was developing this fatigue, shortness of breath.
She knew something was
wrong. Yes, and she had this redness on the skin for the for the past year, over a year, year and a half. Okay, so going back, she was told she was in remission in January. In March, my wife decided to get a biopsy because this redness that she been having.
Redness on the skin. It was
on the skin, all over her chest, and it wrapped around her right arm and back. She was diagnosed that, that's related to her chemo, to the radiation, to a bacterial infection, in which at one point she received like 6 weeks of intravenous antibiotics, fungal infection, saucer, and so forth. Okay? So in March, she decided, and she goes, honey, can I get this biopsy? And I guess, yes. So she ended up going to a dermatology here in La Jolla, and she ended up actually calling me before she got that done and said, they're charging $1,400. Now, keep this in mind that most Americans would not be able to afford $1,400 for a simple biopsy, right? So I said, yes, you get that done. Two days later, I was with my wife at home, and she received a call, and I knew that something was very wrong because immediately she became upset. So I got on the phone and I spoke to the dermatologist, and she had told us that she has recurrent cancer. So that I called the oncologist immediately, and he immediately ordered a PET scan.
And what happened?
Denied.
Again.
This time, I just could not tolerate that. So I requested to pay for it.
And how much is a PET scan?
$4,900. But it ranges in San Diego County alone, it ranges from $4,000 to $20,000. Okay. But the radiology department told us that, oh, you cannot order a PET scan.
So even though you had the means and you were willing to pay like $5,000
yes.
to help save your wife's life
yes.
getting this PET scan, it was still denied. What's
yes.
the reason for that?
Well, they told us that the insurance company are the one that provides approval. And then the only time that you'll be able to order it is if it's approved by the insurance company.
Unbelievable. So the facility itself wouldn't do it for you, even though you had the money.
I had to wait for the appeal process to go through. So it took 2 weeks. March 6th, she got that approval. March 7th, she got it done. March 8th, we went and sat down to the oncologist, with the oncologist, and he pulled up the PET scan on the screen and said, sure. anything that's red, it's cancer aside from the heart. All over her skin, all that redness that she had was cancer, and now it has progressed to her lungs and has progressed to the right side of her neck.
So do you believe if she'd gotten this test done the first time they asked for it, that
it would have prompted a biopsy a year and a half ago, and they would have learned that while the biopsy of her breast mass and the biopsy of the lymph node a year and a half ago showed that she was positive for estrogen, progesterone, HERS2, that she would learn that the cancer that she was having, that never got addressed, was estrogen negative.
So they were treating the wrong kind.
So she had two different kinds of cancer, and they were only treating one of them.
Exactly. So for the year and a half, you know, this wasn't addressed whatsoever because she never got the PET scan that would have revealed that is cancer, and that would have prompted, you know, a biopsy.
So now your wife, Laura, is literally fighting for her life.
A young mother of two. Our daughter just turned 7 this early this month, and our son turned 5 in May.
Now, when I talk to the average person, the average voter out there, one of the frustrations that they express to me is that it seems like the politicians, they tend to either say, oh, Obamacare is great and everything about it is good and we should leave it alone instead of trying to see what problems there are that need to be fixed. And on the other side of the aisle, there are people saying repeal Obamacare and get rid of the mandates and let's either replace it with nothing or replace it with, for lack of a better term, Trump care, which would save the government a lot of money. But according to the Congressional Budget Office, it would kick 23 million people off of health care and make it unaffordable for many others, particularly seniors and those with pre-existing conditions, though it might be less for some young people. So in your wife's own situation, let's be clear, she was not on an Obamacare plan, but you've told me...
Private.
So it was a private plan, but you've told me that some of the denial care was because of provisions in Obamacare. Is that correct?
Well, there's one provision that the whole plan is to save $2.3 billion in a 10-year span by reducing the overuse of imaging studies.
So it comes down to what's considered overuse.
Exactly.
Any reasonable person would say this was not overuse. This is a case where the opposite occurred.
And you can bet your money that this was not decided by doctors, okay,
right.
by selecting, you know, PET scans.
So these were the bean counters making life or death decisions for cancer patients.
And Miriam, it don't matter if it's Obamacare, Trump care, as long as you have the government and insurance company role in it, nothing's going to work.
Yeah, I've had denial of care in my own family, and that was before Obamacare. A very similar thing. I had a daughter who was a competitive figure skater, and she had a fall at home. She was in a lot of pain. The insurance company kept denying the MRI, and it took like a month or so to get it done, and it eventually showed two broken bones, and we had a real battle on our hands to even get the test done. So what's the answer to all of this?
And it's to me, it's so absurd, right? Because when I went to medical school, I was taught to use every tool at my disposal and do everything humanly possible to heal the sick, right? To preserve life, to save life. I was never taught that I needed the approval of the insurance commissar or a faceless government bureaucrat first.
And so you have an interesting idea that we need something other than what's on the table right now, which is either Obamacare as it is or Trump Care for what it's worth. Tell us about your idea, which I understand has two components.
Yes. So I call it healthcare by the people and for the people. Okay. Because I believe that life medical decisions, you know, this profound personal aspect of your life belongs to you, right, and to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think when we spoke earlier, I mentioned that if you bring a loved one, you end up in the ER on Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, or New Year's, who is it that you're going to be in the ER? Who is it that you want to see in the ER? It's your doctor, right? And at that point of service, when you're there with your doctor, there's going to be only two people that's going to know how you feel. What is it that you need? How you should be treated, and no one else.
So you have the idea that it would be a different kind of coverage for catastrophic care, you know, the real emergencies, as opposed to routine care.
You take the routine health care out of the insurance company, right? And you allow the individual and the doctors manage routine healthcare. Just like if you have an auto insurance, it covers you for a catastrophic event, an accident, right? But it doesn't cover for your tune-up. It doesn't cover for your oil change. So I'm proposing what is called a medical association membership, where it provides a unique opportunity to Americans to take charge of their health care.
So as I understand it, just as one can have a gym membership and it lets you go to the gym as often as you want, you can go once a month or you can go three times a day if you choose, you would buy a membership and that would enable you to see your doctor and anybody else in their practice or their group basically as often as you felt you needed it.
That's it. That's it. At a fraction of a cost. So if you're a Medicare recipient, right, mm-hmm. you'll get a $100 voucher from the government, and that will go directly to the doctor. Okay. If you're a Medicaid recipient, it's a $40, $50 voucher that every month that gets paid to the doctor. Now think about this, because we've got to think about, you know, what is it that we want to accomplish, right? We want to provide the best health care, provide maintenance and preventive access, medical access to all at affordable cost, right? How much do you pay, or what do you think the average pay for cable is? I pay like $140, but I would say maybe $80, $100, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about making it affordable, $40. I think for most Americans, will be able to afford to see their doctor, and if they have the option to see the doctor when they need them, right? Mm-hmm. And anyone that they want to see.
Now, you've mentioned that under your plan, that would be paid for by Medicare and Medicaid. What about everyone who's not currently covered by Medicare or Medicaid? How would that work for them?
The premium remains the same.
So they would be paying that $50 or $100 a month instead of the government paying it.
You know, like my, you know, two young people, mm-hmm. right? We're paying over $2,000 a month, and we've been doing that religiously for over 10 years. And then when my wife gets sick, you expect that, you know, that everything possible will be done for her to save her life.
Yeah, it's just astonishing, and our heart certainly goes out to you and your wife. Dr. Veltmeyer, the idea of paying just $50 or $100 a month sounds really good, but I have to ask you, how can the doctors afford that, and what happens if some patients overuse the care?
Sure. Well, for one, doctors will be free of this galactic avalanche amount of paperwork and documentations and queries, and we can streamline everything. We don't have to have a builder. We don't have to have a collector. So we will be able to have that close relationship with our patients, and we're not going to be, you know, dealing with needing to order a battery of tests and exams, because we'll be able to know exactly how you feel, what you need, and so forth. 80% of my 10-hour shift, it goes into answering queries, documentation. Right now, there's numerous of studies, and there's variations of this, what they call direct primary care, and have shown an amazing successful rate, like, you know, decrease in ER visits up to 90%.
Wow.
In one particular state, they saved $119 million in 1 year.
That's amazing. It sounds like an intriguing idea.
And for comparison purpose, let me just give you a quick number. There are 56 million Medicare recipients and 74 million Medicaid CHIP recipients in the United States right now, today. 56 million recipients, each receiving $100 per month. An average of charge for someone 65 and older in direct primary care practice, that voucher, and that will equal to $1,200 per year, equals $67.2 billion. We spent approximately $673 billion on Medicare in 2016, meaning that the MAP will cost 10% of the overall Medicare spending.
Wow.
For Medicaid, 74 million recipients receiving $50 a month, an average charge for a typical younger person voucher, $600 per year, equals to $44.4 billion. We spent about $553 billion last year for Medicaid spending. In total, MAM will cost, under this formula, $111.6 billion versus $1.226 trillion for Medicare and Medicaid combined. Granted that most of the costs, you know, likely came from hospitalization and higher costs of medical care, yeah, and we're not comparing apples to apple, but for a simple comparison, it shows that the minimal cost of a private sector solutions as opposed to a big government solutions. Remember that someone once said that if we simply took all the money in the federal government spends on government program and just send a check to every recipient sufficient to lift him or her out of poverty, it would be one third of what we spent.
Fascinating.
Regarding insurance premium, most research shows that an average healthy person could purchase a catastrophic policy for $75 to $100 per year.
So for $75 to $100, you would have your catastrophic policy. $50 to $75, you would have your everyday policy.
And we're thinking about making it affordable, yeah, right? Now you can try to fix the numbers. And yeah, these numbers will change because right now, like I said, the health market is tied up to the health insurance companies. Yeah.
That sounds affordable for most people, but for those who can't afford even that,
they'll just get the voucher, government voucher.
So the government would be paying a voucher for the poor under your plan, and the rest of us would be paying a little bit more.
And Medicare and Medicaid will pay for the catastrophic care for patients using the MAM, either directly, right, or possibly through a voucher so they can purchase their own policy and manage it.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. So on your plan, you'd be able to choose your own doctor, and there would be a reasonable number of doctors available?
Yeah, so if, let's say, if a primary doctor, you know, you call your primary doctor and you tell the primary doctor, I have severe right upper quadrant pain. Mm-hmm. Guess what? He, you know, you don't really need an actual referral or an approval, pre-authorization or anything like that.
Nice.
That you just get, you know, what your doctor will say, call Dr. Dickinson, and you go to his office, right? Mm-hmm. Dr. Dickinson will make that decision whether you do need the, you know, for your gallbladder to be removed or not. No insurance company is deciding this. And the difference between is that about talking about reduce the cost is that, just like Dr. Dickinson approached me a couple of weeks ago, how disillusioned he was that he's fighting against all these, you know, big, you know, monopoly health insurance company, that he's able to do what they call it laparoscopically cholecystectomy, removal of your gallbladder, mm-hmm, at the door, after anesthesia, antibiotic, and so forth, for $3,000.
Now, your plan would not cover catastrophic care. So in addition to this membership plan, people would need to also purchase a supplemental catastrophic care plan to cover things like an appendectomy or cancer or a car accident. What would that cost?
Currently, right now, all the researchers and all the insurance companies that do provide catastrophic coverage only, they're charging $75 to $100 a month.
How would this affect the insurance companies, and do you think we could expect to see a fight from them over this proposal?
Of course, but, you know, we got to keep in mind what's important here, right? We need to restore the patient-doctor relationship and roll back the role of the insurance company, you know, and the government. Third-party interference has brought us to this point where most people are not able to afford healthcare. And most doctors are not able to practice medicine the way it stands right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people may be shocked hearing this interview because we all know that it's difficult and challenging for poor people sometimes to get health care. And yet, if even a doctor who can afford a gold-plated plan can't get appropriate care when his wife gets cancer, how can anyone else?
That's right. Medicaid, right? I'm going to be just strictly straightforward and honest with you. If you have Medicaid, you're going to get substandard care.
Wow.
There's no question about it. The problem now, too, is that if you have Medicare, no longer doctors, you know, are able to afford to see you. Medicare is managed now by an HMO. So let's just say if I saw you in the ER and, you know, and I spent 2 hours with you, I consulted with four people and so forth, mm-hmm, the most I can charge is $150. So it used to be that where I just bill Medicare $150, and in return they would pay me 80% of that. Now that 80% goes to an HMO, and then in return they give us whatever they feel they want. It's just very simple. Healthcare, it belongs to you. It belongs to, you know, to the doctor. We make the choice whether we want a membership, you want better access to a doctor, or you want a catastrophic, or you want both, or so forth.
Now, you've come from another part of the world, and you've obviously done some research on our healthcare system here in the United States. So, how does our healthcare system in the U.S. differ from healthcare around the world, particularly in other developed countries?
We live in the world's richest country. We have the best trained doctors, the most advanced technology and equipment, yet we're not able to provide affordable health care. The World Health Organization ranked us 36 out of 37 from the industrialized country in access to care, quality of care, treating diseases, and so forth. So we're still...
So we're the next to the worst in the whole world in access to health care.
And we pay more and get less, essentially.
And why is that?
It's because health care, it's tied up to the health insurance. And they're the one who's forcing doctors to practice ration and defensive care.
Is there any other country that you're aware of, other than the United States, that has a for-profit healthcare system?
No, this is the only country that your health, your life, of your family, and your loved one is for sale.
So really, we need to take the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies out of the equation, just like all these other countries have already managed to do.
That's it.
What about prescription drugs?
The FDA will make you believe that if you get medication from Canada, you get medication from, you know, from Mexico, that is very dangerous. But this is what I can tell you, that about 70% of people that are discharged on some form of medication, I get a call from the pharmacy because insurance companies are refusing to pay, and they're forcing me to use generics. Actually, on the way here, I got a call from someone that discharged from an ear infection, and they told me the advisement that the patient cannot afford the copay. So he was advising me to prescribe an eye drop with the same antibiotic and use it for the ear.
Wow.
So think about this. If we're allowed to import same medication, approved medication, to the United States, our American pharmaceutical company, they have two options, right? Get out of town or compete.
Canada is a very regulated market. I'm not sure about Mexico, but certainly if we're getting drugs from Canada, they've gone through tests for purity, for quality.
Absolutely.
Worry about getting something adulterated. So I agree with you. It makes sense. If these pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. won't control the greed and make medications available at affordable rates, then why shouldn't people be able to buy them from Canada?
Exactly. Over 50% of the medication that we have at our disposal, they're not available to our American people because it's so expensive. It's absurd.
My mother is in her 80s, and she's had the same heart and blood pressure medication for years at the same dosage. It used to be a few hundred dollars a month, and suddenly it's jumped to thousands of dollars. There's no reason for that.
It breaks my heart because if you're a Medicare recipient, right, you should have zero copay.
Yeah.
But, you know, think about it. You know, you can't really say the insurance company are the bad people, right? Because what they care at the very end, what really matters to them, it's profit margin.
Well, I guess some people would argue it's rather immoral to put profit over human lives.
But that's their trade, right? And that's like I made that example that when you're sick, the doctor's going to be there, right? The CEO of Aetna or Blue Cross is not going to come and try to take care of your family. So you're not going to get any compassion. You're not going to get preventive care. You're not going to get, you know, maintenance care from insurance companies or the government.
It's gotten to the point where it isn't even reasonable profits, but obscene profits when we've seen what happened with something like the EpiPen, where it went up hundreds of percent in cost.
Pharmaceutical companies have gone rogue. There's no control. And believe me, insurance companies have done the same.
They've gone rogue.
Rogue. That's it. You know, I refuse to support, to subsidize health insurance company profit, and I refuse to, you know, support subsidies for hospital profit, and so forth. You know, if you're going to subsidize anyone, I think we should subsidize the individual, you and the doctor.
Makes sense to me. Now, if people want to get more information about your ideas about membership programs and catastrophic care, is there a website or someplace they can go for more details?
Yes, I'm actually in about 2 weeks, I'm going to have the Weltmeyer Foundation that's going to lay out and flesh out a lot of that detail. V like Victor, E-L-T-M-E-Y-E-R.
So, listeners, if you tuned in a little late, we've been speaking with Dr. James Weltmeyer, who is the head of family medicine at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, and he's been named Physician of the Year several times by his colleagues in the Medical Association in San Diego. So he's a very prestigious doctor whose own wife has been fighting for her life with breast cancer and running into some, as we've been discussing, some very unbelievable hurdles about denial of care, denial of life-saving tests that caused delays which have now put her life at risk. And we certainly wish your wife the best.
Right now, she's undergoing chemotherapy, her fourth cycle, and I believe we put in a request for a PET scan about a week ago. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting on that. I think it's day to day, and I believe that being diagnosed, you know, a year and a half later, that I'm hoping that it's not too little too late.
We certainly hope that, too, and all of us here at East County Magazine certainly send our very warmest wishes to your wife for all that she's going through, and we certainly hope that she'll have a full recovery and do check.
Thank you.
Let us
know. So grateful and so gracious of you to have me here and share my story. I'm hoping that we all can come together to build a healthier world for our children and grandchildren.
Well, that's certainly a wish that we should all get behind, and I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come out and speak with us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Cheers.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. Naturalist John Muir once said, "Of all the paths that you take in life, make sure a few of them are dirt." Greg Dunn, a local hiker and bird talk columnist for East County Magazine, has taken that mantra to an extreme. He and his team were the first to climb all five peaks in Mission Trails Regional Park, all on the same day, documenting their achievement with selfie photos. The park has a five peaks challenge that encourages visitors to climb all five mountains at their own pace, but nobody else has ever attempted to do so in such a short time frame. Not content to rest on their laurels, Dunn's team has achieved another historic first. On May 21st, they became the first to take an epic hike up Coles Mountain and traverse all its surrounding trails in a single day on a 13.2-mile trek. The effort took just over 4.5 hours and was the equivalent of climbing 373 stories, or nearly 4 skyscrapers each, the height of the World Trade Center. Why, Dunn explains, because it is in my backyard, fun, and nobody thought to do it. You can read details about Dunn's route in the Green Scene section at eastcountymagazine.org. You can also visit Mission Trails Regional Park's website at mtrp.org. to sign up for the Five Peaks Challenge, which has been completed by over 5,300 people since it began in November 2015.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.